Okay, are you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah. So how are you making out in the weather there, in the snow?
Well, believe it or not, where I live, we only got about 3 inches.
You know, I read it, but the rest of the country thinks that the whole area got 3 feet of snow.
Well, Buffalo got it, and northeast of Buffalo, Williamsville got hit, and you know, Clarence and Cheektowaga really got hit.
So they got 3 feet of snow in one day?
In one 24-hour
Oh
period.
my God.
And you know what the funniest, this is hysterical to me, is that it snowed. They broke an all-time 24-hour snowfall record,
Yeah.
but it still wasn't classified as a blizzard.
Oh my, what? It wasn't it windy?
Yeah, it wasn't windy.
Oh, can you imagine if it was windy?
Oh, they'd have drifts up to the roofs.
Good. So the snow just came down. It wasn't that windy. It just kept on coming down for a whole day.
And the well, yeah.
Good grief. So how
So I got your letter. I had it. I have it on my desk, and my schedule at work comes out on Saturday, so I waited until Saturday to get the schedule. And then last night, I've been working every night, you know, and we've just been running around. My stove broke. I have no stove.
Oh, God.
And so last night, I grabbed a postcard. I was going to write you a postcard today and drop it in the mail to tell you that this was okay to do. So I've got the postcard with my hotel. It's sitting in my purse to mail to you.
Oh, well.
But I'm glad you called, because what I was going to tell you is that my schedule changes every week, and there's no way I could tell you for sure when I'd be there, you know.
Wow.
I'd be home, and yeah. So this is so it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah. I thought that this would be a nice gift to give ourselves. And you know, you might laugh at this, but I made my call overseas, and I can't tell you what I went through to call someone overseas. My friend who I met in the kibbutz 20 some years ago, I can't tell you the effort that I made to try to track him down. When I finally did reach the kibbutz, I found out from them that he moved back to this country, and I went to our public library here in the city to get the phone number. When I got out to my car, I got a $15 parking ticket.
Oh,
And
no. So for what it would have cost for a phone call.
that's right. So I just said to myself, you know, I'm already behind the eight ball here, you know, and I haven't even made the call. So, then I started thinking to myself, boy, if I didn't even get this letter, or if I didn't see the ad in the paper, I'd be $15 ahead right now. But anyway, so I said to myself, well, who else do I know overseas? And I really don't know anyone. But do you know what a yeshiva is?
Yeshiva?
Yeah.
Not exactly.
Well, it's a school to study Judaism, yeshiva. So
Mm-hmm.
I was there, you know, when I was at a kibbutz for about 3 months, and I thought, well, maybe I'll call someone there. Maybe they want to hear what's doing in this country. So I did reach the yeshiva, and I spoke with a rabbi there, and I think he may have misunderstood me, because he pretty much spent the whole time talking about himself and how he got to the yeshiva and how he got to be a rabbi. I mean, I don't know how that's going to help the language study, because it was basically a monologue. And I, you know, think to myself, you know, what did I say that he didn't hear? So I felt that, I felt that I could have spoken with anyone over there, you know, they could have found out what's going on in this country, and he just pretty much talked about himself for a half hour. And even when the call, 30-minute call ended, he was still, it sounded like he still had about 2 hours worth, you know, of story to tell. And I was like, I was knocked unconscious during the course of the conversation. I was listening to him, but I realized that this is being done for a purpose, to, you know, understand how people talk to each other and respond to each other. And every now and then, I would just make comments, you know. I mean, they were sincere comments, because I really was interested. But in terms of having a two-way dialogue, you know, oh boy. So anyway, so I'm glad that we have a chance to talk, and I got your letter. It was, you know, full of information. And so you moved in with the snakes, or the snakes moved in with you.
Well, I'm not sure. Actually, I think they were here before we came. From what we've called pet shops, we called the zoo, which told us that they couldn't give us any information because they don't want to get sued. They referred us to the New York Conservation Board, and I spoke to a biologist, and he told me what was going on was that they were coming to this place to den in for the winter.
Oh, wonderful. Some people
And
go to Florida, other animals go to your house.
Right. And not just one kind. I mean, this is like a group effort here.
Wow.
Every kind of snake you've ever
Isn't
seen.
Isn't that something?
And Doug just, like, started killing them on sight.
How did he kill them?
With an ice scraper.
Oh, my
God. An ice chopper.
Oh, my God. Oh, that must have been nauseating.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So...
Did they know that they were about to be killed? Did they try to, like, fight for their life?
Well, I missed most of it.
Oh.
Most of this was going on while I was at work. I didn't
oh.
stand around and watch them. I saw them do one.
Oh.
But, you know, I just...
Just thinking about that makes me... Oof.
I know. It was gross. So, I mean, you know, he could have made a fortune on snake skin boots.
Yeah.
You know, if he would have sold the skins. But anyways, there's no product made on the market that kills snakes because they eat live prey and you have to poison the food that they eat.
Oh, yeah.
So there's just no way, you know.
Mm.
So you can repel them, but that's about it.
Well,
I don't know. We think we know how they're getting in and out, and we think they're kind of going underneath the front steps into the concrete. So they told us not to, like, seal up the holes until next spring because they have to have a way out.
Yeah.
Because they'll leave in the spring.
Yes.
And if they don't have a way out, then they'll find a way in.
Oh.
You know?
Have any gotten actually into your house?
We saw one in the basement.
Well, at least it's in the basement.
And I saw it. One, I think I saw the same one twice in the garage, and the garage is attached to the house.
Yeah.
And he, like, went right, you know, it's, like, incredible. They vanish before your eyes. They go into cracks.
Mm.
Like, you know the rim of, like, a wooden door jamb that goes around a door?
Uh-huh.
I saw one go right up into the door jamb.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it just disappeared.
Good grief.
Mm. So, anyway, so how are you?
Well, I'm okay. I guess I'm okay. I've, you know, mixed feelings. It's, you know, I've looked at that. It's been 2 years since I've had my, you know, since I left my full-time job, and I.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. Well, it was September of '93, and I look back and I say, well, you know, what have I done for these past 2 years? And I thought, well, you know, take off a little bit of time, reflect on things, take part-time jobs, you know, and eventually things will come together. And here I am, and you know, I'm still doing the telemarketing in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I take part-time jobs here or there, but, you know, I checked out cooking schools, and I'm still hesitating to take a full-time job, but I'm getting close to it for, you know, I have this thought of, you know, not wanting to be locked into something that I'm not going to, that's going to waste my time even more. Because
right.
I look at, you know, the job that I had it for 15 years, and not to say that it was a total waste, but, you know, I felt that it really wasn't what it is that I was born to be doing, or even close to it. And I really fear putting myself into that kind of situation again.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I could, you know, get jobs, but, you know, but here I am doing telemarketing, and, you know, though it's a much better place to work than most telemarketing jobs because my manager lets us pretty much have conversations with people,
mm-hmm.
and he lets us just, you know, not read off scripts, but just do our own thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm basically socializing with a community for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, this is not easy because, as you can imagine, have you ever had telemarketers call you?
Yes.
Does it sound like they're reading?
Sometimes. Usually, well, I mean, never mind the intrusion.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Right off the bat.
I know.
Usually they talk so fast you miss who, you know, what company they're calling from, who they're representing. And, you know.
Well, see, what I do is I talk slowly, and I don't know if I wrote you my letter, but because of this experience, it sort of encouraged me to check out acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when I
thought the next thing I was going to hear from you, you weren't going to be in Hollywood.
Uh-huh. So when I started doing this telemarketing for the first few weeks or so, I was reading off a script, which was just horrible. And, you know, my manager, I mean, he has an answer for everything. And I think, frankly, well, I don't know. Well, this conversation is being recorded, so I'll say this diplomatically. He has a different point of view on the world than I do. And so I had people hanging up on me left and right when I was reading his brilliant script.
Mm-hmm.
And after doing the script over and over again, I found out that I no longer needed to be reading the script. I just had it memorized.
Mm-hmm.
And... Also, you know, when you say a script over and over again, you can begin to personalize it. you know, so, for example, if I were to say a line to you, it would sound like I'm not reading, but I'm actually just making the line up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll throw a few uhs in and pauses. And in fact, that's what acting is. So, anyways, in the course of my going to different temporary agencies, I literally ran into a woman who owns a talent agency. I went to this building out in the far suburbs of all places. And, you know, I like to talk to anyone, strangers, which is probably one of the reasons why I'm able to do telemarketing, because, you know, I'll talk to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked her some question or something. And, oh, yeah, I asked her, are you the owner of this employment agency? And she said, no, I own a talent agency. So I remember years and years ago I had pictures taken, you know, they call them headshots.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing really became of that. I was sent out on one audition, and that was basically it. And, you know, the whole headshots cost me about $420. So I think the whole place was a ripoff. Just to
did you do that with the intent of going into acting at that point, or were you like, you know, were you willing to do commercials and modeling?
Oh, yeah, I mean,
or,
that,
I mean, what was your
My main intent was to do commercials because, you know, you look at people in commercials, and except for the fashion commercials, they're everyday normal looking people. Some people are handsome, some people are bizarre looking, some people are normal looking, and I fit somewhere in that range, right? Between the bizarre, normal, and maybe a little bit better than average looking.
Bizarre, normal.
Right.
I haven't seen you in so long.
Well, I have more gray hair, less hair, and I guess that's pretty much it. Anyway, so she said, well, after you know, you're welcome to come, you know, to our office. So I go into her office, and I see that it looks like a legitimate place. Plus that I told her about my experience with this other employment agency, and she said, never pay your money up front, you know, before you actually get a job.
Well, that's wise advice.
Yeah, oh, but most places, you know, people think that they can get money for nothing. And you pay a lot of money up front for these headshots or promises that they make. So she seemed legitimate. And so I sent some headshots to her, and I got a card from her saying, you know, come in for a reading. And also when I was in her office, I heard her on the phone with people saying, oh, there's a job down in Baltimore. The job is a one-day shoot. It pays $300. And I'm listening to her, and I'm saying to myself, you know, this sounds like a legitimate place.
Mm-hmm.
So she also asked someone if they wanted to play a juror. And a few weeks later, she told me that they needed someone to be a juror in a industrial film they were shooting for A&P Markets at Philadelphia City Hall.
Uh-huh.
And I said, great, you know, I'll do that. She said it's a two-day shoot. It pays about $200-some. Now, she gets about 20%.
Mm-hmm.
That winter, it snowed, I think, once or twice. Do you know what day it snowed that shut down the city? The day of the shoot.
Oh, no.
I couldn't believe it. I said to myself, you know, there's like 4 months in which it can snow here, and it snows on a day that the only time that I've, you know, ever done anything like this. So it was canceled, and they kept on postponing it, fortunately, to make a long story less long. They shot it, I think, in March or so, and it was a very, very entertaining educational experience for me. It was like being at a party for 2 days. Now, it was also extremely exhausting because you're under the bright lights, and some people actually throw up. You know, one person did throw up. It's, you know, you're basically sitting there under these extremely bright lights. It's very exhausting.
Huh.
Throughout the day, they're constantly feeding you. And, you know, most of the time is spent just sitting around doing nothing. But I actually got to see professional actors, not myself, and I don't put myself in that category, but I got to see professional actors who were playing the role of the lawyers and the defendants, because it was a trial scene for management at A&P. They wanted to show what happens when someone slips on the floor and they sue the A&P and go to court.
We don't have A&Ps here, so I guess I'll never get to see this thing.
Right. Well, is it Super Fresh? Do you have Super Fresh there?
No.
Okay, because Super Fresh took over A&P. Anyway, so they had the lawyers reading lines over and over again. I said to myself, this is exactly what I'm doing in telemarketing. You know, this one lawyer, I still remember her saying to the defendant, Mr. Pinter, could you tell us? And then the director would say, Nina, you're sounding a little tired there. Can you do that over again? Mr. Pinter, could you, saying the same line, oh, I don't know how many times they said this line. And then this was funny. We're sitting in the jury box, and, of course, we have nothing to do but to just, watch what's going on over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And when the actors flub a line, or not even flub a line, but when they, let's say, pause a little bit too long,
Yeah. You
know that they're aware of that, and it affects their whole delivery from that point on. And I heard one of the actors, as he was delivering his line for, I don't know, the 50th time, he threw in like a tenth of a second extra pause,
mm-hmm.
and as he was continuing, I could tell that he was aware that he had an extra pause there and was affecting everything else he was saying. And, of course, when he got done, the director could hear that too. And he said, I forget his name, but he said, okay, do it over again. And he would do it over again, and then when they finally get it right, now there's the sound of the bus outside going by, or there's the sound of the plane flying overhead, or when they finally get it right, now they spot that there's a cable in the background, or the shadow isn't right. And the whole film, I think when they finally put it together, was probably no more than 10 or 15 minutes. But, it took two full days, and I don't know how many shots. And I don't know if you're aware of how TV is done. Are you aware of how many, how they piece together a program?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you ever watch Matlock, for example?
No.
Oh, okay. But you do watch TV?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're aware of when a camera is facing someone, like if two people are talking and a camera
is
facing someone, right? So if the camera is facing someone and you can see behind them, and then in the next scene you see the person they're talking to,
yes.
But you don't see the but you didn't see the camera there
right. Beforehand,
so how do they do that?
Good question.
Well, what they do is they shoot two people talking together with one person talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
They shoot that from one angle. They stop and they move the camera behind the person. Then they shoot the other person talking as though there was no stoppage between their dialogue. And they piece together that. And it takes forever. And when they do those little pieces, the actors have to remember how they were standing, and what they were just saying to keep it, to make it look like there was no editing done.
Incredible.
Yeah, so now I could see that this 10-minute commercial, probably cost them $10,000
mm-hmm.
just for 10 minutes because you have, the judge, the jury, you have 10 juries, the extras, the lawyers, the film crew renting the place, the food, 2 days worth of, union pay for those people, who are professionals.
So have you been, actively seeking other jobs like that?
Well, I've been called in for about five or six other auditions, but
mm-hmm.
as you know, even the good actors, which I wouldn't put myself into, even the good actors, even few of them get the roles. So you go in for auditions after auditions, and if you're lucky, you'll get maybe 1 out of 1,000.
Yeah.
But I've found that each audition I go to, I learn something about my inhibitions and, what I can do better the next time.
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned for a theater role, and that I didn't do right, but again, I learned something. I've taken, a few acting classes.
You're always coming up with something new and exciting in your life.
Well, I just wish that it was something more full-time, because I feel like, to a large extent, I'm pretty much wasting most of my time here. But to me, it excites me to be able to perform and get paid for it. I know that there's, professional actors who do this, and hardly get paid for anything. That probably separates the layman people who are doing this as a hobby from the professionals, who are in the theater.
Yeah.
And, because theater hardly pays anything, and they pay you very nicely for the commercials, but then again, you have to make yourself available, and they can call you and say, Rick, we've got an audition on Thursday. Can you go in? And if you have a full-time job, you can't do it. And, so you take off the whole day, you go in, and most likely you won't get the part. So when you finally do get a part, it might seem like a lot of money, but for all the time you've spent, it probably doesn't amount to much. But you said that your back, that you occasionally have back problems. I was wondering how your back's feeling.
Well, since we moved into this house and I'm not doing a lot of stairs, it's feeling a lot better. I think climbing all the stairs that I had to get up into the other apartment had something to do with it.
Huh.
This is a ranch.
Oh, okay.
So you like go take two steps up and you're in the house.
Oh. So something about making that movement affects your whole body?
I think it must have.
Hmm.
I mean, I've really, knock on wood, since we moved in here, I haven't had any problem at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Huh. And you said that you have seen a chiropractor?
No.
Huh. Because, you know, what you're describing, and I'm not a chiropractor, but I've had great experience in looking at things in great minute detail. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, and I have seen a chiropractor a few times, so I'm very aware of, you know, that when you have a body injury, it's most of the time it's due to some mechanical cause, some specific movement. So if you can connect that with walking upstairs, there's probably some movement that you're making that is connected with your alignment or whatever, you know, however your body is structured,
right,
that's resulting in that pain. And I'm not saying that you should see a chiropractor, but it's interesting that you're connecting walking upstairs with creating that pain.
Sure seems to, you know, be very obvious to me. But, I mean, I think it's a genetic defect myself.
Mm-hmm.
My father's had two back surgeries. My
sister's
had back surgery. Mm-hmm. My other sister has been out of work for a couple of years because of her back. And, you know, it's just, I'm in the best shape of anybody.
Mm.
I get bouts of sciatica and parts of my foot go numb sometimes.
Really?
And, yeah, it's hard.
Does your foot get cold or just numb?
Just numb.
Hmm. And so you have trouble controlling your foot? It just like dangling there?
It's what it feels like. It feels like I'm like dragging my whole foot sometimes.
Wow.
You know, it hasn't been that bad.
Yeah.
And it's like when it gets that bad, it usually only lasts for like a couple of days.
Yeah.
To that degree.
Yeah, and you've seen a doctor on that?
No. I've been real stubborn about it. I mean, between all the doctors that everybody has been to and all the reading I've done, it, you know, I don't think I've been that bad yet,
mm-hmm.
as bad as I could get.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure I could get worse.
Yeah. Do you have medical insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was thinking for someone like myself, like I'm not covered with medical insurance now,
mm-hmm.
so I really have to be in a bad situation, you know, to see a doctor. And actually, I think there's probably one or two things that I should see a doctor on. But I don't know. You know, unless you're working full time or even, you know, getting paid half decently with a part time job, seeing a doctor is very expensive. And when I saw my chiropractor, you know, he wanted me to come back a second time, and I just said, you know, I didn't say this out loud to him, but I just said, you know, to myself, well, I'll see how I feel in a few days. If I'm still feeling very bad, you know, I will come back. But if not, you know, I really, you know, would prefer not, you know, not coming back. Because I did something bizarre to my back, and I was in excruciating pain, and I let it go for a week, and finally I just couldn't stand it anymore. And fortunately, he was able to help me. But I think I have some sort of unstable back alignment. And horseback riding is an absolute no-no for me now.
Yeah, I wouldn't even consider. You know what throws me off, too, is vacuuming. I mean, vacuuming can set me right off.
What is it about vacuuming?
I don't know.
Huh. You know what would be interesting? The next time, and, you know, this would be an exercise in meditation. I guess the reason I guess why I become more aware of, like, body sensations is because, I don't know if I wrote you, a few years ago I went to a place called the Omega Institute.
Oh, yeah.
And I took a course called Vipassana Meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not one of these meditations where you space out, but you're actually just sitting there watching your breath, being aware of body sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And as a body sensation comes up, you just, like, notice it and go back to watching your breathing. And ever since that experience, I'm very aware of different body sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with vacuuming, like if you know that your back is going out, the next time you vacuum, you could pay attention to, you know, how your body is feeling.
It's gotten to the point now where, well, I asked Doug to please do the vacuuming.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, all the doctors, I mean, between every, like I said, you know, everyone I know that's had the back problems, they've gone to every kind of doctor you could imagine, and vacuuming was always one of the things that everyone was told not to do.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking here? I forgot that I thought that we had an hour to talk. I'm noticing that we probably have about 3 more minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Now, what'll happen is that I guess a voice will come on and say, you have 1 more minute.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
This went too quick.
Yeah, I know. Well, I figured that we wouldn't have any problem talking for 30 minutes.
I mean, I feel like we just, you know.
I know.
Like, oh,
well, hopefully, you know, we can talk again. So you're still working part-time? Or?
Yes.
And you're doing your counselor thing?
Well, when they call me,
Okay. So that's part-time. And what about the hotel business? Is that what you do in the evening?
Yeah.
And how is that going for you?
Oh, it's fun. It's a fun job. It really is. I like working in the hotel. You know, you get to see people from all over the world and talk with them and find out what's going on in other places. And, you know, it's not a high-pressure job.
Yeah. So. It's probably a lot different from telemarketing. I mean, it's emotionally draining. It's having people swear at you. You know, once in a while you talk to some nice people, but it's not something that I would wish on anyone. But there's something about it that that's brought me there.
A job's a job.
Yeah. So you're counseling in the hotel, and you're okay in your house, and the snakes are okay.
The snakes are tucked in for the winter.
Yeah. Hi, Brittany. And you and Doug are okay?
Depends what day you're talking to me on.
Oh, all right. And you might go to Florida?
We were talking about it. He's got off in February, and my manager told me that he doesn't care if I leave for a while in February because it's so dead anyways.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Huh. And how are things in Buffalo? Is it still the same old city?
Oh, yeah. Buffalo's Buffalo. Except I don't actually get into Buffalo City much anymore because I work out in Williamsville, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, Yeah, everything's about the same here. The governor was here for a news conference yesterday so that him and the mayor could, like, you know, pat each other on the back for the good job that they've done in clearing the streets.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, this is the third day in a row that there hasn't been any school. You know? It's like they can't get the school buses down the side streets yet, so this is the third day in a row there was no school in Buffalo today.
Mm. Wow. That's unusual.
Yeah, it is. Mm. But, you know...
So how far out from, let's say, Williamsville do you live?
Ten, 15 minutes.
Oh, that's not that far.
No.
Because I don't know when I'll be back to the city. My father came to visit here, I think, last year or so.
Yeah.
You know, we spent a few days together, and you know, we did some nice things. My father travels all over the place now. He and his partner, you know, have taken trips to Las Vegas and Israel and Italy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so he's, I guess he feels freer now to travel. So I don't know when I'll be back. I just have become so much less tolerant of the cold. My fingers actually get not numb, but they get very cold when the temperature drops below 55.
Did you ever have frostbite?
No, but I probably came close to it. And my mother had the same problem. She always had very cold fingers.
Huh.
So, it's like as I'm getting older, I notice my system is like slowly shutting down. Yeah. And, you know, with my back getting very stiff, my fingers getting very numb, I also have difficulty getting up in the morning.
Oh, my goodness. Come on.
Yeah.
You're not that old yet.
Oh, no, I don't mean to say that I'm old, but I'm noticing that I seem to have less energy than I had when I was younger.
Yeah, well, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
But I think part of my problem is if I took off, like, a zillion pounds, I would probably feel a lot lighter and I'd probably be moving quicker.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know what...
So how's your sister doing?
Well, she doesn't really correspond with me. You know, I guess the less said, the better. Well, but in terms of, that's just about our relationship. She's doing okay. She's still in Seattle. She had a counselor job.